theme in this series of Sanghamites is mind training, a tradition called mind training. And what we've been looking at the moment is one particular mind training text called The 7 Points of Training the Mind. So we've heard how this mind training tradition began in Indonesia when that was still a Buddhist country. It was still very much a hotbed of the Dharma. And then was taken to northern India by somebody called Atisha. And then from there it went to Tibet. It went to Tibet where it was preserved for throughout the centuries and became very influential in all of the main schools, all of the schools of Tibetan Buddhism. And so it was preserved there, and that's allowed it now to be spread to Sheffield, all those centuries later. And this teaching, the 7 points of mind training, the one particular text that we're looking at the moment, it's a short text designed to be memorized off by heart, so that we can use it as a practice all the time. It's meant to be something that's used all the time. It turns our daily life into practice. And actually, there are quite a family of texts that all go under the name 7 Point Mind Training. There's loads of books on it. You can find loads of books. You can probably find 4 in our bookshop and more in the library. And you'll notice that the texts are all slightly different. The order of the lines might be a bit different, et cetera, according to which school it comes from. But they all say pretty much the same thing. And we've heard that the text sort of introduces itself by saying, if you know the meaning of this text, the 5 defilements will be transformed into the path to enlightenment. And then a bit further on, it says, transform adverse conditions into the path to enlightenment. And that, in a sense, is what the mind training tradition is all about. Transforming adverse conditions into the path to enlightenment by changing the way we think about them. The mind training gives us powerful ways of turning the things that happen to us in daily life, all the time, that we think of as bad, undesirable in some way, I mean, in some sort of small way, the things we get irritated about or anxious about or upset about, turning those very things into the path of practice. And it does this by changing, helping us to change the way we think about what happens to us, helping us to change the stories we tell about all the little events in our lives that we usually they don't matter so much, but we make them matter so much. We allow them to blow us around. Because in fact, most of the things that happen to us, which we think of as bad, which we might describe as adversity, if you like, well, they're not actually bad in any real absolute way. They're not going to kill us. They're not really harm our real well-being. A Buddha or an enlightened being just wouldn't be fazed by them at all. We just think, oh, it doesn't matter, does it? They're only bad because of the way we think about them. And if we thought about them differently, they could become something positive. So Shakespeare has Hamlet say, there is nothing good or bad, but thinking makes it so. And I don't think he means good or bad in the ethical sense. He means, you know, well, that's a terrible thing that's happened, or that's a great thing that's happened. Thinking makes it so. So the mind trainer gives us ways to change that, to change the way we think so that bad things are transformed into good things, the path of practice. Transforming the way we see the little bad things that happen every day from seeing them as problems that we get really anxious about into seeing them as spiritual opportunities. So when some little thing we don't like happens, someone is critical to us, or someone is rude to us, or our train breaks down, or somebody scratches our car and drives off before we can get their number plate, or we go on holiday for 2 weeks and it rains all the time, or we get a cold, or we sprain our ankle or something, instead of the mind training sort of helps us, instead of going, oh, this is terrible, this is terrible. How could this happen to me? Tell a story that turns it into a disaster. Instead of that, how does this give me an opportunity to transcend my usual way of being? How does this give me an opportunity to rise above circumstances and become a bigger person? How does this give me an opportunity to connect more with others who also experience this sort of thing? So the mind training helps us to ask, how does this give me an opportunity to think and behave like a real Buddhist rather than a normal worldly person? And ultimately, the mind training asks us to transform the way we think about the things that happen to us from, as it were, from the way a normal worldly person would think to the way a more enlightened being would think, to the way a bodhisattva would think and respond to the events of life. When that happens, when we sort of try and see things the way a bodhisattva or an enlightened being might see them, it can be quite shocking. It can seem pretty radical, actually. So you might find things in some of these talks where you think, what? But, yeah, it's not the way a normal worldly person sees things. And very often, you know, where our Buddhism is doesn't go all that deep. On some level, we're still quite worldly. After that line, change, transform adverse conditions into the path to enlightenment, the next two lines in the version of the text that we're using are gather all blame onto one and be grateful to everyone. Gather all blame onto one and be grateful to everyone. And we're going to look at those the wrong way around, okay? We're going to look at the second one first because I volunteered to do this talk and... Anyway, that's why. That's why we're doing it that way around. And also it makes more sense. So we're doing it the wrong way around. This week, I'm going to talk about that line, be grateful to everyone. And next week, Mokshatara is going to talk about what it means to say, gather all blame onto one. So be grateful to everyone. Well, obviously this isn't some sort of command or commandment even. Nobody's forcing us to practice the mind training or threatening us if we don't. What our text is saying is that if we want to practice the mind training, if we want to get some practice of transforming the way we think into the way a more enlightened being would think, then right from the start, one of the ways we would do this is to cultivate as much gratitude as possible. And even if we can, to find ways of thinking that allow us to be grateful to everyone and not just the people who obviously benefit us. So if you've done our intermediate course, which most of us have done that intermediate course on the Noble Eightfold Path, you'll remember that on the second week when we looked at emotion, we did an exercise in which we spent 15 minutes or so just calling to mind all the people we could think of, right back to our childhood, to our earliest days, all the people we could think of who had benefited us in any way. And we sat there and we wrote them down on a piece of paper. And you probably also remember that you called to mind loads of people you'd completely forgotten about. Loads of people came to mind. You thought, oh yeah, they did that. Or, oh, they had that really positive effect on me. They took that real interest in me. Whatever. Loads of people that we just completely have forgotten about. Some of whom had a big impact. Teachers, friends at school, all sorts of books we've read, all sorts of things like that. You probably also remember that when we started to think about it, the list just seems to go on and on and on and on and on. If we include, this seemed to be endless, if we included all the people who benefited, all the people who run the services that we all depend on, etc., etc., grow the food we depend on, people we don't even know, there wouldn't be enough paper in the world. to write all their names down. Not that we know their names, but even if you just did a tick for each of them, there wouldn't be enough paper in the world. So when we do that exercise, it's quite common to just realise that how completely we depend on others, how completely our well-being depends on others, how completely even our life depends on others, that we, without the help and support of others, we wouldn't be alive, and we certainly wouldn't be the people we are today. Without the continuing help of support of others, we couldn't exist. I mean, how good are you at hunting? We're held in existence by the society we live in, and the ecosystem that supports us, and et cetera. We are totally held in existence by things from outside ourselves. And this realization of our complete dependency on others and the world around us, our connectedness to others and the world around us, this is an important aspect of the Buddhist wisdom of non-self, an Atman. And that idea of an Atman is often misunderstood to mean, somehow doing away with the self, deconstructing the self, realizing we don't have a self, we're just nothing. But of course we have a self, but we don't have the sort of self that we think we have. We have a sort of self which is evolving, changing, and which is just very, very intimately, totally, infinitely interconnected with others and the world around us. Doesn't exist as a separate thing. Exists as part of this meshed whole, enmeshed in a whole. A whole with a W. A totality, if you like. So we don't exist as standalone beings, that's what it's saying. We don't exist as sort of self-determining standalone beings. We exist in relationship. And if you like, the emotional side, the emotional equivalent of seeing that truth, seeing that wisdom, is gratitude. Gratitude is the emotional counterpart of that. And of course, this idea of our complete dependence on others, existing in that way, that idea goes right back to the Buddha. It goes right back to the Buddha. You can find, it's just absolutely built into the Buddha's teaching. And if I can... So, for example, there's a sutta in the Pali Canon, about this young chap called Sigala, Sigalavada Sutta. So the story is told in the sutta, is that one day in the very, very early morning, the Buddha is going off to do his begging round in the city of Rajagriha. And off in the distance, he sees a young man come out of the gates of the city, who's obviously just had a wash. He's all wet, his clothes are wet, his hair's wet, he's streaming water. And he makes for this hill, he makes for this low rise, and he stands on top of this hill, and he bows. First of all, he bows to the east, and he turns through 90 degrees, he bows to the north, he bows to the west, he bows to the south, he bows to the ground beneath his feet, and he bows to the sky above his head. And the Buddha sees this happening, sees him going through this, and when he's finished, he approaches him and says, why, young man, were you doing that? Why were you doing that ritual of bowing to the four directions and above and below? And the young man, very young man, probably in his teens, says, well, on his deathbed, my father, when he was dying, he was very concerned for me, and he gave me this practice. He said I needed protection, and he said, if I did this practice every day, it would protect me. So I promised him I would do this practice every day. Sigala is a very young man, as I said, probably in his teens. Now he's the head of the family. He's the head of the family business. A bit innocent, not that worldly wise, obviously needs a bit of help, needs a bit of protection. Needed all the protection he gets. So his father gave him this practice to protect him. And Sigala tells the Buddha, My father gave me this practice so that I would honour the world that supports me and keeps me in existence, so that I would be protected by the world. And the Buddha says, well, that's really good. That's really good. You carry on doing that practice. Carry on doing that practice. But you can improve it, actually. You can improve that practice. There's a practice, the way of doing this, which would give you much, much more protection. What you should do is think, when you bow to the east, Sigala, think of your parents and bow to your parents. And when you turn to the south, actually it would be the north. I might have got this wrong. He's going anti-clockwise now. Bear with me. Anyway, when you turn to the south, you should think of your teachers. Think of your teachers, your worldly teachers, the people who taught you your education, your trade. As you bow to the west, you should think of your wife and your immediate, your children, if you like, and you should express particularly your gratitude to your wife. And you should think of your friends as the north, so you should bow to your friends as the north and connect with your respect and gratitude for your friends, not just the northern direction. And then you should think of your servants and employees, obviously head of quite a big business, you should think of your servants and employees as the ground beneath your feet, and you should bow to them. And you should think of your spiritual teachers as the sky above your head, and you should bow to them, thinking they're above your head. So in this way, you bow to the 10 directions. And at the same time as expressing, as it were, your respect for the world, you're expressing your respect and gratitude for the relationships that keep you in existence. So there's this vision, if you like, of Sigala as the centre of this network of relationships which is keeping him in existence, his spouse, his friends, his teachers, his servants, his employees, his spiritual teachers. All of that, he's the centre of that network, and that is what keeps him in existence, keeps him protected. And the Buddha goes on to say, the way you express your respect and gratitude to all those people, it could involve a bit more than the symbolic act of just bowing in their direction. You need to express your respect and gratitude to these people by the way you treat them, by the way you treat them. In a way that's appropriate for each type of relationship. So, for example, you should obey your parents when you're young and support them in their old age. You should address teachers with respect and pay close attention to what they say. You should be generous to your friends. You should treat your employees and servants as equals, as so on. And the Buddha goes on to give a list of the ways that we should show respect and gratitude to each type of relationship. And incidentally, I mean, this we've sort of taken this sutta on a bit in Sri Ratna, and one of the things that's been suggested is most of us don't have servants or employees. So when we bow to the ground beneath our feet, what we could think of is all the many service providers who keep us in existence. The health service, the bus drivers, the et cetera, the great infrastructure that keeps us in existence, all the people who grow our food for that matter. So the Buddha goes on to say, if you show your respect and gratitude to all these different types of people in all those different ways, then they will show their love and respect and gratitude to you. And then you really will be protected. You really will be protected. You will be surrounded by this web of positive relationships which supports you and which you which supports you and which you are strengthening. This is the way to if you like, give honour and thanks to what supports you and keeps you well and happy. So Sigala here, the Buddha brings, Sigala's not even a Buddhist, but he's brought face to face with the reality of his interdependency with other people. The fact that he's not an isolated individual. He owes everything to other people. He owes his existence to other people. He's kept safe and in existence by his relationships to other people. He exists, as I said, at the center of a web of relationships. And the way to strengthen, to protect his existence is to strengthen and protect those relationships out of gratitude. It's that starts with realizing his dependency on them and realizing his gratitude. So each of us is likewise enmeshed, surrounded and enmeshed in a set of supportive relationships, or we couldn't exist. We're all part of a web, a network of mutual benefit. And when we honour and nurture those relationships out of gratitude, that's the way to live a protected, happy, healthy life. If we ignore those relationships, take them for granted, we will be weakening, destroying that web, and that will end not well. So the mind training advice to cultivate as much gratitude as we can is the way to benefit ourselves. It's the way to benefit ourselves as well as others. I mean, Sigal is not even a Buddhist. He's not trying to give him a spiritual teaching. He's giving him a perfectly worldly teaching. You want to be happy and protected, mate? Gratitude. Gratitude and recognizing your dependency. So, even from a worldly point of view, even from the point of view of externals. But a life lived of gratitude is also, it's just the way to live a good life. It's the way to live a happy life. It's the way to live a fulfilled life. Gratitude is in many ways the key to positive mental states. The alternative to gratitude is very often complaint. So we can either focus on the ways in which we are held into existence, benefited by others, or we can focus on the ways that others don't do the things they should. And focusing on ways others don't do the things they should is a really good way of being really miserable, because they won't. Why should they? We don't do the things they want. Why should they do the things we want? we're unskillful. They'll be unskillful. Yeah, great. So we can spend our lives just making ourselves really miserable by focusing on all the ways other people are unskillful, don't do the things we want, ways we don't get what we want, etc., etc. Or we can recognize the reality that we wouldn't be here. We wouldn't be alive if it wasn't for the ways others keep us in existence. We can look at the world with kindly, appreciative eyes, or we can look at the world with sort of complaining eyes. even from our own sort of point of view of the even just worldly well-being, but certainly mental and emotional well-being, gratitude is not something that we do because it's supposed to be sort of spiritual or good. It's just in our own interest. It's just in our own interest. It takes us away from this always focusing on ourselves, which keeps us trapped in a sort of clammy, horrible, damp sort of prison cell of our own small self, cut off from others. So we can probably see that recognizing that many, many people benefit us, support us, that we exist as part of a web, that we have a lot to be grateful for, we can see that this makes a lot of sense from a perfectly selfish point of view. Of course we can be grateful to people who benefit us if we make ourselves aware of that and focus on it. Of course we can. But the mind training advises us to be grateful to everyone. To everyone. Not just the people who benefit us. How can we be grateful to somebody who doesn't benefit us in any way? Doesn't seem to. And even more challenging, how can we be grateful to horrible people? Difficult people? Annoying people? People who get in our way and stop us doing the things we want to do? If we really want to practice the mind training in its fullness, I mean, it's quite a challenging practice, but if we really want to practice it in its fullness, if we really want to try to see the way, to try and see the world in the way that a bodhisattva would see the world, or a more enlightened being would see the world, to act in the way that a bodhisattva would, then we'll make it our practice to try to see everyone as part of this web of relationships. The connectedness of an Atman, it applies to everyone, not just to people who benefit us. Everyone is part of the web of relationships that we're also part of, even people who don't appear to benefit us at all. That's why we put the neutral person in the metta bhavana, try to bring the neutral person alive, try to really see that they're a person just like us, just as important as us. Real people connected to us in a very real way. That's a wisdom practice when we try to do that. And as Buddhists, we try to bring that wisdom, that awareness of other people, to bring that awareness off the cushion and make it part of our practice to walk through the world knowing that that person there and that person there, everyone we meet is part of that same web, part of that same web. Remembering that we're all woven in the same web that keeps us all in existence, even that stranger over there. That would be the way a bodhisattva sees things, and that is the way we should strive to see things if we wish to be more like a bodhisattva. And of course, that's not just the way Buddhists see things. That's not just the way Buddhists see things. I mean, that's the way people with a degree of wisdom from all traditions see things. It's expressed, for example, in that famous poem by John Donne, "No man is an island entire unto itself. Every man is a piece of the continent. If a clod be washed away by the sea, Europe is the less. Any man's death diminishes me because I am involved in mankind." So that's expressing that sense of connectedness of all people, certainly. In fact, for Buddhists, all being. And that's part of what the mind training is getting at when it advises us to be grateful to everyone. Being grateful to everyone is an expression of that wisdom that sees how we're all connected, how none of us are an island, we're all, as it were, parts of the continent. Okay, so that's all very well. That's all very well. So far, we've talked about people who benefit us and people who just seem to be a bit neutral, a bit useless. They don't do anything to help us, but we might include them out of our generosity. People who don't benefit us in any way, but who we can maybe accept are part of the same web of relationships that we are part of. But what about those difficult people? Be grateful to everyone, it says. What about the people who are difficult and unpleasant? People who are rude, people who cut us up on the road, people who don't do what we want, people who are unskillful in all sorts of ways. What about them? How can we be grateful to people like that? And why should we? Well, as I said earlier, mind training asks us to see things the way a bodhisattva would see them, rather than the way a normal person would see them. And so it sometimes seems radical or even shocking. And so people who practice or try to practice mind training sometimes say really shocking things, like the Dalai Lama, who says, "Chairman Mao is my best friend." Or, "I am really grateful for the Chinese army for invading my country." Okay? The Dalai Lama tries to practice the mind training. So he says these shocking things. Chairman Mao and the Chinese army are great friends because they destroyed the cozy, easy world that many Buddhists lived in Tibet and forced us to face adversity. And after all, the mind training tells us that to use adversity as the path of practice. No adversity, no path of practice. Chairman Mao is my greatest friend. If there's no adversity, there's no path of practice. So we should be grateful to those who create some adversity for us, because they're helping us to grow and develop and transcend the person we are at the moment. So, yeah, I said earlier the mind training asks us to change the way we think about the bad things that happen, so that instead of telling our usual story that makes them bad, we think, how does this give me a spiritual opportunity? How does this give me a spiritual opportunity? So when we bump up against a difficult person, instead of getting angry or blaming them, we think, how does this person give me a chance to rise above my usual reactions? How does this person give me an opportunity to rise above my usual attachments to my possessions, my reputation, my popularity, whatever it is? How does this person give me an opportunity to become, in other words, a bigger being, bigger than I am at the moment? How is this an opportunity for spiritual bodybuilding, if you like? How does this person give me a chance to think and behave like a real Buddhist? So someone is rude to me. An opportunity to get over myself, to get over my own importance, and maybe even sympathize with them for having a bad day. Someone criticizes me. An opportunity to let go of my deluded idea that I'm perfect. Let go of my pride and actually try to look at myself through somebody else's eyes. Someone scrapes my car and then drives off without stopping. An opportunity to rise above my attachments and see that it's not that important, actually. It's just not that important. A Buddha would not be fazed by somebody scratching their car. Well, they probably wouldn't own a car, but they wouldn't be fazed by it. Maybe a Buddha actually would be more concerned about the states of mind of the person driving that car. Well, I hope they're not too sort of scared and upset by this. I hope they're not feeling too bad about it. I'm reminded of the story of the Buddha's Parinibbana. We're going to celebrate the Buddha's Parinibbana on the something, 10th. In the story of the Buddha's Parinibbana, we hear about how he's already ill, he's already got terrible dysentery. And a smith called Chunda gives him a meal of truffles, which basically does for the Buddha, basically. It does for the Buddha. He's just incredibly ill. He's got bloody diarrhea. He's in terrible pain. He's dying. He's in pain. And what's he concerned about? He's concerned that Chunda, the smith, shouldn't feel bad. Not that bastard Chunda. You should know you don't give truffles to him. You know. None of that. He sends one of his disciples off and says, well, talk to Chunda and tell him he mustn't feel bad about this. He just mustn't feel bad about this. He's dying and in pain, but his concern is with the other person. So someone's scratching my car, which I hope doesn't happen, it's out on the street, but someone scratching my car would be an opportunity. If I was really practicing this, I would think, yeah, terrific, I've now got an opportunity to rise above my concern for this stupid car. And that would be my response to it. So it's quite challenging, the mind training. It can be quite challenging. Would be an opportunity to rise above my usual knee-jerk reaction. It's just sort of ingrained from my conditioning and my past. And put myself in the shoes of a Buddha or a Bodhisattva. Give me an opportunity to rise above my dependence on outer things and to become a bigger person. Less dependent on the outer world. So looked at in the right way, it would be a good thing that has happened, not a bad thing, if I just thought about it differently. So that tells us, the mind training tells us, I should be grateful to the person who did it. I should be grateful to the person who did it. Well, personally, I'm not sure I would feel gratitude. I'm not sure I would feel gratitude. I have to own up to that. But I might, if I really was practicing, if I was on, if I was on form, I might at least be able to recognize that the person had, in a way, done me a favor. Given me an opportunity to rise above the self that I am habitually. Given me that opportunity to be a bit bigger. give me an opportunity for spiritual bodybuilding. And that is in fact far more important to me and my real well-being than the paintwork on my car, which is not important at all. I could maybe recognize that I have been benefited rather than wallowing in anger or blame. And I think that's what the mind training is suggesting, because the Sanskrit word that gets translated as gratitude, kirtanyata, actually means recognition of benefits received. It's a cognitive thing. It's about recognizing I have received the benefit rather than some sort of heartfelt, warm emotion of gratitude. It starts with just recognizing the benefit, and we might at least be able to recognize that we have been benefited by somebody who, for example, scratched our car, criticized us in some way, etc., etc. So that's a little bit about this whole practice of gratitude, if you like. Maybe easy enough, but certainly really worth putting some effort into cultivating gratitude for those people who do or have benefited us. We can extend that to people who we can't obviously see benefit us, but that would be very much a wisdom practice, to really see that we are connected to those people. And then even going so far as to extend recognition of benefits received to people who cause what a normal worldly person would think of as some sort of harm to us or some sort of get in our way in some way. That's what this is asking us to do. And we can take it on, obviously, at various different levels. So if we do want to take on this mind training practice, summed up in that line, be grateful to everyone, at whatever level we want to take it on, how could we go about doing that? How could we go about doing that in the week ahead? Well, one thing we could do is just to bear that line in mind. So keep it as much in our awareness as possible. So one of the features of the mind training practice is that it suggests that we use what are sometimes called slogans, little sayings, short sayings. We use slogans to help us stay mindful of what we're trying to practice. There is a line in the mind training which says, use slogans to train in all activities. So whatever we're doing, we try to keep these slogans in mind. And so I'm going to suggest that maybe we as a Sangha take on that slogan this week. Take on that slogan, be grateful to everyone. And to help us do that, Aryadasa has actually produced some cards that say, be grateful to everyone. So take one of these cards, put it on your shrine maybe, or put it somewhere where it's going to be most useful. Put it somewhere where you're going to see it, the mirror of your car, if that's a problem, wherever it is, it's going to be, thank you. Keep it in mind, refer to it as often as possible. Keep it in front of you when you meditate on it and include it in your meditation. And then try and put it into practice. So take one of these, try to use it to remember. You could stick it, you could make replicas and stick it up all over your living space. Remind yourself of it, keep it in mind, and then, lo and behold, try to practice it. So we might practice it by, in our daily life, as we go through our daily life and all those little things happen that we think of as good and bad, retraining our minds to look for the positive in what people do, what we could be grateful for, what we can praise, rather than what we can blame people for or criticize. Looking at the world and other people with appreciative eyes, we could just take that as our practice for the week. And then we could do also, so I'm going to offer you a bit of a menu here. We could also do something to remind ourselves of how much we are dependent on others. And I'll suggest three possibilities for this. One, we've all done the gratitude practice that we do in the intermediate course, where we just sit down and spend 15, 20 minutes calling to mind the people who have benefited us throughout our life. You could try doing that at least once this week. Or do what some other people I know do and try and make it a practice to end each day by thinking, who's helped me today? Who's benefited me today? In what ways have they benefited me? Maybe write that down. Keep a gratitude diary. Or you could do the practice that Sigala does. You could include that in your meditation. Bowing to the directions, calling to mind those different relationships that keep us in existence, honouring them, expressing our gratitude to them by bowing. So finally, those are a few suggestions. The gratitude exercise, the end of day practice, the Sigala practice. And finally, the most challenging, we could try to single out one difficult person. Just think of a person who we think is difficult. That person who we might put in the fourth stage of our metta bhavana. So again, not the person who's sort of blighted our life maybe, but somebody who we find is a little bit difficult in some way. And then we would seek to work on how we think about that person. How do we think about that person? What is it about the way we think about that person that makes them seem so difficult? Let me tell you, the world is full of people with flaws, and I'm one of them, and you're one of them, but some people really get up our nose. And why is that? Why is that? Why is that particular person singled out as a difficult person? And how could that person be an opportunity to rise above my usual response, behave more like a bodhisattva would behave? So we might ask ourselves, well, what is my usual reaction to this person? And what is it? What is the attachment or the ego agenda that person somehow doesn't fit in with or threatens? What is it that makes that person so difficult to me? And it will be something, it may be something to do with what are called the eight worldly winds. They cause me pain in some way, they criticize me in some way, they threaten my possessions in some way, they threaten my status in some way. What is it? What is it about that person? Or is it just that they've got some habit that actually I might have a little bit of myself? So what is it about that person? Do they damage my pride? Do they get in the way of one of my agendas? And could I rise above that? Could I rise above that? Could I put that to one side and say, well, actually, that's just due to the way I think about this. Put that to one side and see them as an opportunity to be a bigger person. See them as an opportunity to be more like a bodhisattva in that relationship. Could I do something more like that? There's some ideas for the week ahead. And if we can do some of this, if we can really make it our practice this week to be more grateful to those who benefit us, and even to include in our gratitude those neutral people, and even those people who we find difficult, rather than focusing so much on the ways people don't do what we want, then we might find that we start to see some chinks in our usual concern for ourselves appearing, and we might see some joy shining through those chinks.